All right, counsel, welcome to this rather unusual session of the Supreme Court. Let's see, Ms. Calloway.
Yes, sir.
All right. The clerk will call the first case.
Berry versus Fitzhugh and others, Ann M. Calloway, appellant's counsel, Jeffrey R. DeCaro, appellee's counsel.
All right, you may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Ann Calloway. I represent Marsha Berry in this appeal. This case that arose in Fairfax County was a partition of a single family home in Falls Church that is located on a single city lot. And therefore, partition in kind was not possible given the size of the lot, the zoning laws, etc. The goal of this appeal is to accomplish one objective, and that is to have an outcome that divides the property and the costs of obtaining the partition of the property equally among the five co-owners. Fairfax judge ordered the partition sale and for the sales proceeds to be divided equally among the owners. However, she did not order a payment of our contribution from the unrepresented parties to the plaintiff's attorney's fees. She did not order that the costs of the sale be allocated equally among the co-owners. And she did not order that the rental value of the parties that in possession of the property since 2012 to have everyone's share adjusted for the rental value of the parties that had lived there without paying rent for varying periods of time. In terms of the legal fees and the costs, we rely on section 8.01-92 of the code where, and 8.01-31. 92 says in any partition suit when there are unrepresented shares, the court shall allow reasonable fees to the attorney bringing the action on account of services rendered to the parsoners unrepresented by counsel. There are four defendants, two are represented by counsel, two are not. And I believe that under the plain language of the statute that my client should receive contribution to her attorney's fees from the unrepresented parties. The evidence is clear in the record that that my client made extreme efforts over the course of about 5 years to get her co-owners to sell the property, even hiring an attorney, I believe it was in 2014, to draft a partition suit. And at that time she was persuaded to drop it because her siblings said that they would agree to sell it, but nobody ever followed through. And she, in order to get her value out of the property, she was forced to file a partition suit and forced to actually go to trial and have a trial in a partition suit when the issues, when it was so clear that she was entitled to partition, being a co-owner, co-tenant, and was forced to incur all these fees to accomplish something that was so straightforward.
Counsel, hi.
Yes.
Hi, this is Justice Powell. I have a question about our case law and the wording of the statute. What is your position with regard to what role the language from our case law, which says that fees will not be awarded if the positions are antagonistic?
Well, I don't believe that the positions of the unrepresented parties were antagonistic. There's nothing clearly in the record that shows they are antagonistic. Maybe they were ambivalent because this is between siblings, but, you know, Judge, Azarkadi found that the parties were all going to benefit, but was in the benefit of all the co-owners for a partition to be made and for the property to be sold. So if it benefits all the parties, as the judge found, then the position isn't antagonistic. You know, they're all going to benefit whether represented or not. I mean, I don't know how the unrepresented parties could claim that this outcome hurts them in any way. I mean, had the status quo been permitted to continue, they're, you know, being expected to contribute to taxes and insurance on a piece of property that they're not occupying, that their siblings are occupying for free.
Would I be reading too much into the judge's comments that the services were rendered to the opposing side, to read that word opposing as being synonymous with antagonistic?
I think that would be reading too much into it. I think the judge was simply looking at the procedural posture of the case, in which Marsha Berry was the plaintiff, and inevitably all the other co-tenants are going to be defendants, simply because that's how you would have to draft the case to get it filed, and not to omit any necessary parties.
Well, counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. Would antagonistic include a co-owner who objects to the partition in kind? Would that concept of being antagonistic be someone, look, I don't want to sell the property, we can all co-own it, there's no reason to sell the property, it's a bad time to sell the property, etc. Would conceptually that be a legal basis from your perspective for the antagonistic exception?
If they oppose the partition in kind of this property, or just in general?
They don't want the property to be sold. They are co-owners, and they don't want it sold out underneath them. Would that be sufficient, just conceptually? Forget your fact pattern for a second.
Well, I don't think so, because even if the court ordered, or which the court did order, a partition sale, that doesn't prevent the parties that wanted to continue to own it from buying out their sibling and continuing to be co-owners. I mean, that's certainly an option, and was always an option up until the time the trial was held, that the other siblings, knowing that the plaintiff wanted out, if they wanted to continue to co-own it, you know, as the four of them, they could have done that, but they never did it or attempted to do it. And my client was
right, but suppose
to...
I mean, suppose you and I owned a house together, and you said, suppose we're both co-owners of a house, and you said, I want to sell the house, and I go, I don't want to sell the house, it's a great house, we can work it out somehow to share it, etc. But you say, no, Arthur, Justice Kelsey, I need to sell the house. Why wouldn't it be reasonable for me to say, well, I don't think that's a great idea, but if you want to, I can't stop you, but you got to pay for it. I'm not paying for it. What's unreasonable about that concept, assuming arguendo, I'm not asking you to concede anything, that the statutory antagonistic idea, which is case law mostly, is the rule?
Well, if you and I owned a piece of property and I said I wanted to sell it, or I wanted, and you said I want to keep it, then I would say, then buy me out. Pay me for the value of, you know, my share.
But suppose I said, but I don't have a dollar to my name, I can't buy you out. And you say to me, but I have a right to partition. And I say, well, I guess you do. I don't know how the law works, but you got to pay for it. I'm not going to pay for it because I don't want it. Just conceptually, would that be enough to be the antagonistic, fit the antagonistic definition?
I don't think that fits the antagonistic definitions. I mean, I think you'd have to revisit the whole statutory scheme and case law of partition if that, if that's going to be a new condition of a plaintiff, you know, forcing a sale through partition and being forced to take less than her percentage share at the end simply because she had to file a lawsuit. I mean, the statute says, you know, this certain list of people have the absolute right to partition. And so and then the other statute says the, you know, accounting inequity may be had by one joint tenant against the other for receiving more than comes to his just share or proportion. I mean, I don't think trying to force someone to remain a co-owner of property results in the kind of antagonistic position that would deny a plaintiff from receiving the attorney's fees per the statute. I just think that the law is the law. And if co-owners don't want to have to, if one co-owner doesn't want to continue to own the property, then they either got to pay for it, you know, buy out the other owner, or they have to be subjected to a partition suit and the accompanying law that goes along with the partition suit. And the same with the rental value. I mean, you can't just say we didn't want a partition suit, and therefore it's okay for three of the co-owners to have lived there for now going on 8 years for various lengths of time rent free when one co-owner is objecting to it. I mean,
aside from either being ambivalent or agreeing to it, how antagonistic would one have to be to satisfy your definition? If you understand, aside from just being ambivalent, I don't care what you do with the property, how oppositional would the other side have to be in order to be defined as antagonistic?
I don't even think that test comes into it. Under the statute where it says, I think the only question is, are the defendants represented or unrepresented? That's what the statute says. And we're stuck with it unless, you know, the General Assembly decides to rewrite it. And it says, when there are unrepresented shares, there's no further, clarification as to what the mindset is of those unrepresented shares. It just says, when there are unrepresented shares, the court shall allow reasonable fees. And they use that word shall, which has always meant, to me, mandatory until recently when people started questioning what the word shall means. You know, my earliest recollection of the word shall came from Sunday school and the Ten Commandments. And I, at that time, there was never any suggestion in my mind that it was optional.
Brings us full circle back to the first question that I ask you. How much is this statute informed by our case law where the concept of antagonistic comes in?
I think that the only way I know how to answer it is this. In terms of antagonistic defendants in partition suits, on the issues of attorney's fees, I can't find any case law on that pertain to partition suits. And I think that's because this is never an issue. I mean, there, in my experience and the cases that discuss attorney's fees, it's just a given that unrepresented parties have to contribute to the attorney's fees of the plaintiff. This is the first time I've ever had it disputed, and I haven't seen it disputed in the case law on the issue of partition. So I don't think antagonism has anything to do with it in this context if the ruling is going to be consistent with the language of the statute. you know, I think that it would invite all kinds of mischief for, you know, defendants to have side deals and all, you know, one person's going to hire an attorney and nobody else is going to hire an attorney and they'll get all get a free ride. And the plaintiff's got to bear the full freight of the cost of doing something that she has the absolute right to. And I can see I'm about out of time. And I think the case law supports the rental value, the contribution towards costs, and ordering the unrepresented parties to contribute to legal fees.
Counsel,
all right, before Scalloway, you are out of time. Justice Kelsey, did you have a question?
Very short one, Chief, with your leave.
Absolutely.
The statute literally says shall allow reasonable fees. Does the word reasonable fees, did the word reasonable capture the idea of the court having discretion? And I apologize for the question coming so late, but if you can be brief in your response, please.
Well, anytime the word reasonable is used, then obviously, or I think that everyone accepts that then that invokes the judge's discretion. And then the judge can come back and, you know, as a practical matter, what the judges do is the plaintiff plus the number of unrepresented parties, whatever that number is, the plaintiff's attorney's fees divided by that number, and each, you know, the attorney's fees are allocated to each one to add up to the total. But I think that math problem is not in the statute. I think reasonable means judge's discretion.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you for your argument, Ms. Calloway. You are now out of time. Mr. DeCaro, you may proceed.
Yes, good morning, and may it please the court. Picking up, I guess, with the last comments by Justice Kelsey and the other justice, I think it's rather clear from the case law that the word antagonistic is part of the equation. And I guess we need to also keep in mind that partition is an equitable remedy, which clearly requires discretion by the court. And all one has to do is read the decision by the trial judge to know that she tried very hard, and I think rightfully so, to do justice, to fashion an equitable remedy, understanding that she was ordering partition, but she heard all of the evidence, she commented on all of the evidence, and she made a point of saying that it was very unclear from the testimony that the issue of rent was ever discussed, or was ever demanded or requested by Ms. Berry. So she took that into account, and also took into account the fact that the other four siblings, two represented, two arguably unrepresented, though interests clearly aligned with my two clients, that they had paid utilities and taxes and insurance and maintenance and repairs. And Ms. Berry had paid very little, no maintenance or repairs. At times had paid some of the taxes, but there was a tug of war going on there for a number of times when taxes were due. So I think when you look at it in its entirety, it's clear that Ms. White and Rodney Fitzhugh's interests were not aligned with Ms. Berry. And I think that actually is clear from the brief filed by Ms. Calloway, where she indicates to the court that there was at one point an alignment of interests, allegedly, between Ms. Berry and those two siblings, Marilyn White and Rodney Fitzhugh, where they were going to join in the partition suit, but did not. So that by the time the partition suit was filed by Ms. Calloway, it was clearly one against four, and that is the way the evidence came in. The four were not inclined to sell for a number of reasons, one of which I think one of the justices commented on, they didn't think it was the right time. Yes, there was sort of a decision, if you will, that ultimately the house probably should be sold when the time was right and the proceeds would be split. I just I wanted to quote from Judge Asgerati's opinion, and she says there's not enough evidence to show that she, meaning Ms. Berry, was banned and could not live there. There were a lot of meetings. There were a lot of going back and forth. Whether or not there was a meeting of minds, it doesn't appear to be. But whether sometimes the plaintiff had stated that if she just paid the property taxes, she would consider that rent, there were other times where it was not brought up at all. There is testimony that there wasn't rent ever brought up. And then she goes on to say, I think that the two siblings that are on the property at this point did pay for maintenance and care of the property, electric, heating, water, etc. And therefore, I am not going to require rent at this time, but we are going to make the sale rather quickly. So her decision clearly took into account all of the factors that are required for her to consider in a partition suit, including the fair rental value of the property, costs, fees, and she made, in my view, the proper decision.
Counsel, clearly the court, as you just read, took into consideration the discussions with regard to taxes versus rent. I'm having a difficult time finding in this record the factual basis for making a decision as to what Marilyn and Rodney thought about this particular action at this particular time. There are facts that would indicate historically they wanted to wait until the property was improved. There are facts that would indicate that they were aligned with Marcia in the first partition suit that was never filed. But several years had passed. There's nothing really in the record that I can find that indicates what their positions are currently or were at the time of this lawsuit.
Yes, a fair question. They each did testify. All five siblings testified, and they gave their reasons as to why they didn't think selling the property now was appropriate. Mm-hmm. My recollection, I don't have it at my fingertips, but my recollection is it was a timing issue. They also felt, I think, a little bit taken advantage of is probably too harsh a term, but that Ms. Berry had not contributed her fair share and was not paying her share of the taxes, her share of the insurance, and they felt that was unfair and that there had to be something resolved about that. In fairness, as one can tell from this suit, there was a split between the siblings. Clearly didn't see things the same. If they did, I suppose suit would have never been filed. But to answer your question directly, I think their testimony was very much akin to the testimony of Gregory Fitzhugh and Lisa Montgomery about just not thinking it was appropriate at the time. Understanding, I believe Gregory Fitzhugh was the one who said both before suit and at trial that he understood that at some point the property should be sold and the proceeds divided. Here we are now, because of this appeal, of course, nearly 2 years out from when Judge Asgerati wanted to have the property sold. So the delay continues, but it has to be done equitably, and I think that's what the trial judge wanted to happen. In fact, as I'm sure all of you know from reading her opinion, she appointed a special commissioner to sell the property and made it very clear that the fees of the commissioner would be split five ways. In fact, near the very end of her decision, Ms. Calloway asked, well, if we have to have another appraisal done, who pays for that? Can that be split five ways? And the judge was very clear and said no. In fact, I'll quote, it's near the very end of her decision. And Ms. Calloway said, and in terms of the cost of the appraisal, is that to be borne by the plaintiff too, or is that to be shared? And the judge indicated there's probably going to have to be another appraisal done, so that is going to have to be borne by her. Okay. And of course, Ms. Calloway said, okay. So I think she was rather clear. She understood that it was Ms. Berry who wanted to force the sale of the property, that the other four siblings did not agree. And that this was very much an antagonistic situation between the siblings. And as has been pointed out already, although the statute has the word shall in it, we can all agree on that. I think the case law that has interpreted that statute is very clear. And even these are the cases that were cited by Ms. Calloway, both Stewart versus Hoffman and the Patterson case, where the court says, but the discretion invested in the court should never be exercised in a case where the interests of the party whose fund is sought to be charged are antagonistic to the party for whose benefit the suit is prosecuted. I think that language is rather clear. I think the testimony below and just the fact that there was just one plaintiff and not two or three is a pretty clear indication that what we're talking about is one co-owner who wants the property sold and four who don't. So I think Ms. Calloway and her client achieved the result they wanted. They got Judge Ascarati to order the sale of the home under terms that she believed, and I believe, are fair and equitable, given this, the situation with respect to the maintenance of the property, while two of them live on the property. And I didn't say this earlier, but it's in our brief. I think we're talking about abuse, an abuse of discretion standard here. And I don't think that Ms. Calloway has proven or certainly persuaded the court through either her argument or the brief that there was any abuse of discretion. And in fact, I think the judge was very careful to weigh all of the factors. And to
this is Justice Kelsey. If I may interrupt you, can I ask you about the pleadings of the four siblings, including Marilyn and Rodney? Do the pleadings flat out say, one, oh, we agree with petition, it's okay with us, thank you for including us as a defendant in this lawsuit? Or do they say, two, no, you're not entitled to petition. In fact, it's against our wishes, or somewhere in between. When the judge is reading the pleadings of the parties to determine the true antagonistic nature of things, what do the pleadings say? Your pleadings.
Certainly, and thank you, Justice. We very much opposed the partition. So it was, there was proof offered at trial that at a certain point, Ms. Berry wanted to have access to the property. There was a split in the testimony, in fairness, about whether she had a key for a while and then didn't have a key for a while. So there was a lot of, first of all, to answer your question, the pleadings very much said we do not want a partition.
So I'm looking at affirmative defense number 6, which is paragraph 12 of one of the defense pleadings. Let me make sure I've got the right one. And it flat out says she's not entitled to a partition. And she, quote, has not brought the action in good faith, quote, does not have clean hands. Are your pleadings for Rodney and Marilyn similarly expressing that sentiment?
Justice, I would say that, yes, in the sense that once we got to trial, it was more clear to me what their position was. And indeed, they testified to that in the courtroom. So yes, I would say their position was very much the same as Lisa.
Counsel, I'm sorry, you only filed on behalf of Lisa and Gregory, is that correct?
That is correct, but at the trial, I indicated to the judge that I was, in essence, representing the wishes of the four siblings.
I don't see anything in the testimony from Rodney and Marilyn that really would support that. Again, their testimony to me seemed to reflect their historic position of when we went into this, when mother died, when he wanted to file the suit, we all wanted to improve the properties before we sold them. But no one ever asked them, as far as I can tell, what their position was on the day of trial.
And you'll have to bear with me because I didn't read that recently. And of course, this trial occurred some time ago. But my recollection is that their testimony was rather clear that they didn't agree. Again, if they agreed, in essence, they would have at some point aligned themselves with Ms. Berry.
Or why they just remain neutral? If they didn't agree, they didn't care one way or the other at the point suit was filed. Why could that have been a fair read of what's going on?
I don't remember it that way. So I'm just going to have to tell the court that, as I recall their testimony, it was very much they did not agree with the partition suit. And they were opposed to it. Again, I think if during the course of the trial that their attitude or their position on that would have changed, it would have been rather clear to the court that there was now three people who were in favor of partition. And I suspect the judge would have said, well, okay, then you do have to pay some of the fees because your positions are aligned. I don't believe that was the case, and that's my firm recollection of their testimony and their position at trial. And I think, again, there was no testimony. In fact, there was testimony by Ms. Berry that at some point she agreed that if taxes were paid and insurance was paid, she wouldn't make an issue of the rent. So I know I'm shifting gears a little bit, but it's clear that what Ms. Calloway is asking for is a portion of her fees being paid, a portion of her costs being paid, and somebody paying the fair rental value of the property. And I would just hasten to add that I think the court had all of the evidence clearly in front of her. This was a one-day bench trial. She was very attentive. She read through the case law. That was clear. And she made the correct decision, in my view.
All right, counsel, your time has expired. The clerk will call the next case.